You're listening to the Denver Real Estate Investing Podcast, where it's all about helping you grow your Denver real estate portfolio. Here's your host, Chris Lopez.
Hey everyone, Chris Lopez here, and today's episode, we're going to be talking about a deal analysis for one of our clients' third Nomad and House Hack property in Denver. So this property closed in the fall of 2019, so Joe Massey and myself are going to go through all the details about how we found the property, the client profile, the numbers, why we liked it, and trying to go into as much detail as possible. So if you guys don't know who I am, my name is Chris Lopez. I'm a real estate agent at Your Castle Real Estate, and I focus on helping house hackers buy rental properties and also helping traditional landlords buy rental properties. That is my main focus, what I enjoy doing. And my co-host today is Joe Massey, who is the senior loan officer at Castle & Cook, and he does all types of financing. Joe, good to have you back.
Hey, you know what, Chris? Really appreciate being here, man. Love talking about these great deals. Love, you know, seeing new strategies. This particular client, we're going to talk about one of our favorite guys because he's really sharp, really goes after his goals for nomading, house hacking. This is going to be a great one that we can all learn from.
Yes, and if you guys have questions while you're listening to this recording, definitely reach out. Joe and I love talking about it. We also love doing these types of deals. So, quick thing before we get into the episode today. I just got the final outline, and I should say the final timeline for launching the 2020 edition of the Denver Real Estate Investing Strategies Guide. This is a book I first published earlier this year with the goal of publishing a new book every year. And the cool thing about it is a crowdsourced book from other investors around Denver. And the commonality is the person lives in Denver or invests in Denver, but it's all Denver focused. And now I'm asking for people to submit their chapters for the 2020 edition. I will send out an email. I'm actually going to do a dedicated podcast soon on all the details about submitting it, but I want to go on everyone's radar. I'm in the process of writing my updated goals and strategies for 2020. And Joe, you were in the 2019 edition, and you're working on your 2020 chapter too, right?
I am, yes. That homework was actually just assigned to me today. So I need to get started working on that and come up with what are my 2020 goals. I already kind of have a loose idea, but putting them down on paper, great way to achieve your goals. You've got to share them with other people. That's what makes it a goal and not simply a dream. And you know what? A lot of people have talked to me about the 2019 information, and it's really kind of helped hold me accountable. So I'm excited to update the 2020 stuff and put it out there for everyone to see.
All right, guys. So make sure you're looking for that podcast, or if you can't find it, email me. I want to get a lot of people on here. We had 20 investors in the previous edition. If we don't have at least 21 in this edition, I am going to be a little bit disappointed in myself. So that's the goal I have for this book. Lots of good content, at least 21 investors in this book. All right, moving on to our house hack and this Nomad property that we helped close in Denver. So to give everyone some context, we're going to start doing these deal analyses with a more strict format. And we want to start off by giving you a very high-level profile of the investor so you can understand where he or she or the couple is coming from. So no better way to say about this client, Joe, than to say he is like our poster child for buying Nomad and house hack properties in Denver.
Yeah.
This is not his first. He knows what he's doing, and he's just on top of it. So from very high level, if there's ever a Denver dictionary and you look up Nomad investor, this guy's picture should pop up in there one day.
But let me tell you, just on a side note, this is a regular guy.
Yep.
Regular dude, good job, works in a corporate job, makes, you know, good money. Regular guy, you know, has done a lot of transactions, a handful of transactions, comfortable moving every year because he understands that that's going to help him nomad properties and gain wealth, comfortable living with roommates. It's probably not the most glamorous thing to have roommates, but you know what? He understands it's a means to an end. Regular dude, great guy, somebody that you would want to go have a beer with and just BS and watch a football game. Regular guy, not some, uber wealthy person that's doing this, just a regular dude. And the reason I know he's listening, but the reason I'm telling everybody out there, this is not like a one-off. This is something that everyone can achieve. So I want to get that out there. I think it's important to understand
that. That's a really good point to highlight.
Yeah.
And that's why we like the Nomad and House Hack strategy, because really anyone can do it as long as you're willing to move.
That's right.
It's a guaranteed recipe for long-term wealth building.
Yep.
So this is not his first property. His first property was actually a fourplex he bought on the west side of town in 2017, and he purchased it with an FHA loan. And then last year, Joe and I helped him buy his second Nomad and House Hack property. And this is up north, Thornton, North Glen area. And it was a detached single family with a mother-in-law suite he purchased in right around October 2018. And he used a 5% down conventional lending. And so for this property we're about to talk about, this is his third property. And his goal is to buy another house hack and another Nomad property because he has roommates living with him to subsidize his mortgage and actually help him live rent-free and bring in some cash flow, with the plan of about at the one-year mark to turn around and buy the next property because he's on it and he wants to accumulate a lot of properties as quickly as possible.
So when he's done with all that, now he's not just going to be a regular dude. He's going to be an ultra wealthy real estate investor,
yes,
which is the important point.
That's
right?
The end goal.
Right. That's the end goal. So carry on.
So getting into the investment property, love the location. It's in Southwest Denver. I can't give out the exact address, but it's near Alameda and Sheridan. So you guys know where that is. So Southwest Denver, still one of the affordable pockets of Denver, west side of town. I think it's just got lots of great long-term upside. So like the location and the type of property, it's a detached house, so a single family home with a mother-in-law suite in the basement. And the main floor, so it's a ranch style upstairs, four bedroom, two bathroom, kitchen, living room on upstairs. You go downstairs, has a walkout basement, separate entrance, and that's where the mother-in-law suite is. And it was a, you know, full kitchen, three bedroom, one bath, or three bedroom, two bath. I can't recall how many baths it has, but pretty standard, like 3-1 or 3-2 stuff down the mother-in-law suite. So the purchase price was right around $485,000, which I know a lot of people go, wow, that's, you know, that is not the cheapest property out there.
No,
and this
not.
Is why you don't just look at purchase price. I talked to a lot of newer investors or talked to people, you know, on different internet forums. And oh my gosh, that price is so high. Numbers don't make sense. Well, you can't just look at the purchase price. If that's the only thing you're looking at, you're maybe missing a lot of great deals. As we go through these numbers here, you will see why he happily paid $485 for this house.
I hear people tell me all the time, I only look at investment properties below $250,000. Anything below $275,000, they would never have never have seen this deal and would have missed out on a great deal if you're putting those barriers out.
And so why we liked it, again, just awesome location. It had the perfect setup for house hacking with the mother-in-law suite. And he was able to use really, really favorable owner-occupant financing. And so that was a 5% down conventional financing, where if Joe and I were to buy this as just traditional landlords, investors, we're putting down right around 20% with a higher interest rate. So he's getting it for a much lower down payment with a better interest rate than what you and I will buy as traditional landlords.
Absolutely, because I would not be house hacking it. I would still continue to live in my house and buy this as a rental.
Mm-hmm. So where do we find this deal? I'm going to do a drum roll here. Where do you think we found it, Joe?
Oh, this fancy place called the Multiple Listing Service.
Bing, bing, bing. You win the prize for today.
Right.
That's exactly where we find it. And just so everyone knows out there, the majority of Nomad and house hack properties we find and we buy, they're on the MLS. I talked to a lot of people. I talked to some people where they're trying to figure out how to do some offline lead generation or with wholesalers to find their next house hack or Nomad property. It's not impossible to do. It just makes things a lot harder because those properties are usually geared towards fix and flippers, investors that can pay cash, hard money. Doesn't have to be habitable when they buy it, and they can close a lot very, very quickly. Where if you're trying to come there with owner-occupant financing, it just makes things usually a lot more difficult. So if you're out there looking for a Nomad or house hack property, I would put the main focus on the MLS. And if something pops up through networking or wholesale, great. Mm-hmm. But the main focus should be on the MLS. I mean, Joe, you close a bunch of these transactions on the lending side.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, what percentage would you say come from the Nomad or from the MLS for, you know, owner-occupant investments?
I would say 90% from the MLS, 8% from networking, 1% from wholesale, and 1% from lead gen. MLS by far.
Yeah, I don't have our exact numbers, but we're probably, I mean, close to 100% for house hacks, Nomads, for what the transactions I do as an agent. So MLS, just like to highlight that where we find the deal. And so everyone knows, hey, the MLS, it's a great place to go fishing
That's
for
right.
your next investment property. So when we went out there and actually, you know, hey, great, we found the property. Now, I actually want to walk you through a very high-level overview of the offer process and the contract. This is one of the things that Joe and I want to get more details on as we're revamping our deal analysis, is going to more details on the contract and more details on the lending side, in addition to all the property details and number details. We'll give you some more insight into actually how we get these properties closed and some more behind the curtain stuff. So finding the property, like I said, we found this on the MLS, and I would classify this as a really easy one because this was the second transaction that the client did with me, also with Joe. Mm-hmm. So we all kind of knew how to work together. We all knew what each other wanted. And actually, this is one that the client found on the MLS. He just, hey, guys, this just popped up. Looks amazing. We checked out, said, yeah, it does look amazing. We'll call the agent. Let's go check out ASAP. And since this is not his first rodeo, we walked the property. We immediately started the process for getting the offer put in, which a lot of stuff happens on our end, but we were able to act fast because our client knew what he wanted, and he also trusted us to do our stuff behind the scenes, get the offer going and write up the contract. And one of the things that we do that helps us win deals in this competitive seller's market is we do act very, very fast, and that's one of the things we bring to the table, and sellers and listing agents like people that act fast.
Yeah. One thing I want to point out too, it's not up here, but he was fully pre-approved. Once he was ready to go out looking, he said, called me up. Hey, Joe, I'm ready to go look at properties. Great, man. I need your updated paycheck stubs, W-2s, tax returns, bank statements. We had him pre-approved before he was out looking at properties. So when you guys found the right property, or actually he found it on the MLS, y'all didn't have to go through that step of, oh, now we got to gather all our stuff to get pre-approved. Like, he did not put the cart before the horse. He did it in the appropriate order. Called you. Hey, Chris, I'm ready to start looking at properties. Great. You got to talk to Joe. Here's your pre-approval. Great. Now we're going to set up your search. Now we're going to go look at properties. He did it in the appropriate order, so he's ready to act fast.
Yeah, and that's a really good point to highlight, because if we had to stop and get pre-approved, there's probably a good chance we've not gotten this property.
Yeah.
That's just because the market acts fast, and this was a good property. And you hit the nail on the head. One of our, you know, our process is we like to get people pre-approved before we go look at properties, because what almost always happens, oh my gosh, I love this property. Great. Are you if you're not pre-approved, it just starts a fire drill for everyone.
Yep.
And more likely than not, we can't get our ducks in a row in time to get that property under contract.
Yeah. It doesn't take that long to get pre-approved. It takes about an hour once you send me your documents. But gathering the documents might take you a day, 2 days. I don't know how organized you are. That's where you want to start that process first. Mm-hmm. Right?
So we wrote up our offer. We put it in there, and we actually wrote the offer right around $480,000. The list price was north of $480,000, but we put it at $480,000 with a 28-day close. We usually like to do a 21 to 28-day close for a house hack of Nomad properties. We typically do that for most of our properties, actually. Then we like to write a tighter, quicker contract just because the sellers like it, and we all can move that fast. I mean, we've closed deals with you, Joe, in like less than 10 days on finance deals, which is not the norm.
Yep.
But again, speed is one of the things that we do that helps us get properties under contract. But we act with speed, but always make sure we all do help you do your due diligence, make sure it's the right fit. One of the things that we always like to do is when we're usually writing the offer, you know, like we're drafting the offer and the client's reviewing it, we're reaching out to one of our preferred inspectors to go ahead and start getting an inspector lined up, because we'd like to have our inspection complete within 72 hours of when the property goes under contract. And why do we do that? Well, because the inspection is by far the biggest hurdle where most deals fall apart.
Yep.
And so we want to, as buyers, to know, hey, if we can't make this deal work, great. We want to end that relationship, so we move on to the next thing. And frankly, the sellers do too. Like if we can't, you know, have a good inspection resolution, the sellers want to move on as well. So it's in everyone's favor, in our minds, to get the inspection there completed really quickly, because that gets the ball moving. So we had the inspection completed within, I think, 2 days of when we go under contract, maybe 3 days at most, but typically we move fast. And like I said, we get those things lined up. So we did the inspection. We got, you know, put our offer in, and then we do our routine where we call the agent, we outline our offers, we give the highlights of it, we tell them we got the inspector lined up. Joe does his magic where Joe sends his email that highlights, you know, his background and how he can close, how he's going to have no problem working with this buyer to make sure that the buyer closes. You follow up with a phone call. Yep. Should probably let you talk about what you do rather than me.
Yeah.
But like every time I see him, I'm like, yeah, this is good.
So we have a very defined process that when you guys put in that offer, We're going to call the listing agent, introduce ourselves, talk about who we are, talk about, hey, you know what? This is a 21-day contract. This is perfectly normal for us. This is not something I've got to request some sort of special rush request or ask my boss or get a special act of Congress. This is perfectly normal, right? It's normal for us to write a 10-day contract, a 20-day contract, 28-day contract. Oftentimes, I know the listing agent. We've done a number of transactions. If I don't know them, you know, sometimes I know someone in their office and I can say, hey, you know what? Talk to Bob over in your office. He and I have done transactions together. He'll tell you that this is normal. Answer any questions they have. They might say, hey, you know what? Tell me a little bit about the buyer. Now, I'm not going to give out specifics, but I'm going to say, hey, you know what? This buyer, A, is fully pre-approved with us. For that, that means we've verified their paycheck stubs, tax returns, W-2s. We have fully underwritten this buyer. Nothing is going to trip them up other than inspection and the property. So once we go under contract, as long as the inspection is good, we're going to move forward to get that appraisal started, and there's not going to be any lending challenges. That removes a lot of stress from that seller, which makes our offers, rise to the top because very, very high certainty we're going to close.
Yep, exactly. And so that's just, I mean, we all do our stuff. And something I always like to tell people as well, it's not just about submitting the offer. It's what Joe said. We're all talking to the listing agent. We're communicating. We're telling them, hey, where we're at, you know, not giving away our secret sauce or private information, but having a 5 or 10 minute phone call with the agent goes so much farther than just submitting an offer. And we routinely win offers that are, we're not the best price, but we have the best package.
That's right.
And like Joe said, a lot of times it's just a very high certainty to close.
Yep.
So getting back to it, we did the inspection. We had it really quick. We had the inspection report back within 24 hours from our inspector. Now, for a lot of these properties, there are inspection items. If you guys have ever seen an inspection report, most inspection reports make it look like the house is going to fall over in a couple days because there's red everywhere. And that's just the inspector's job. They highlight everything. But then we always go through with the inspector, with the client, say, great, here are the things, you know, what do you want to focus on? What are the big ticket items? And generally, we do not get nitpicky because it's one of the things we help close deals on. But there were some major issues with this house that we needed to get addressed one way or the other. So to highlight some of the main ones, HVAC. The AC was not functional and there's no AC disconnect and it was not wired correctly. Electrical. There was some interesting stuff going on here with the electrical at this house. So the main panel was about 150 amp, but then there are two interior subpanels at 200 and 125 each. Now, I am not a master electrician, but I think generally speaking, you don't want your subpanels with higher amperage than your main panels.
Yeah, I kind of understand. Yeah.
So some issues there that we wanted to get addressed. Oh, and the third thing was the roof. There was some hail damage and it needed replacement. I mean, surprise, surprise, hail damage in a roof in Colorado. We did the sewer scope. I can't recall anything that popped up on there. So I think it was fine.
Yeah.
So you guys know what we usually recommend for our inspections is hire the inspector. And then do a sewer scope and also do a radon test. Those are three things we always recommend to our clients. And our inspectors, they'll do the roof. They'll do the normal interior inspection. Then we have a third-party sewer company usually come out and scope the sewer because roof and sewer are the main things that get expensive and will blow up deals under contract. And there are some, you know, normal miscellaneous stuff, but those were the three main items, the HVAC, electrical, and roof. And so what we wanted to do was, depending on the items, sometimes we like to have the seller repair it, and sometimes we like to have the buyer do their own work. So a lot of it just depends on what item needs to be repaired versus what the seller's comfort level is. So based on a lot of factors here and based on what our investor's profile was, he wanted to do the repairs himself because he's got some good connections. He wanted to oversee himself, make sure it's done his way, and he could do it for, you know, below normal retail value. So we went back with our inspection objection and we asked the seller for a concession of $22,000 in lieu of repairs. And so what that means, it said, hey, Mr. Seller, here are the items that we're concerned about, or I should say our buyer's concerned about. And so you don't have to go through the hassle of repairing all the stuff. So instead of you repairing the stuff, hey, please give us a credit of $22,000 and our buyer will repair it himself. So what we ended up doing, we submitted the inspection objection. Then we had some conversations, some back and forth, and then we negotiated a $14,500 in seller concessions for these repairs. Now, Joe, $14,500 in seller concessions for repairs. I mean, that's pretty high.
That's a lot.
Yeah. So we were happy with this. Our client was happy with it. The seller was always happy with it because they didn't want to deal with the repairs. They wanted to move on to their next project. So we had about $14,500 in seller concessions. Now, we'll talk about what we did with that money because there are some options you can do with those seller concessions on lowering the price, which is oftentimes not the best use of funds when you're looking at optimizing your return.
Right.
So I'll let Joe talk about that because that's in that is in his wheelhouse. But moving on to the financing overview, Joe. Joe was the lender on here, did a 5% down conventional. And then I'll let you take over here, Joe, and talk about the rest.
So met with the client. We sat down, looked at a 5% down conventional. Obviously, he could have put more money down. Didn't want to because he wants to keep his cash in the bank to A, do the repairs, but B, probably buy another property in the future. So we met, discussed 5% down, conventional loan. Great. Go through, do the appraisal. Appraisal comes in right at the value. No issues on the report. So fantastic there. Now, the seller concessions ended up being a little higher than that $14,500 because there was an existing tenant in the basement. So the buyer received the security deposit as well as prorated rents and prorated property taxes. So net, he had about $17,879 that he was using or was receiving from the seller. Now, he could have used that in a couple ways. A, we could have just negotiated for that $17,000 to reduce the price. You can do that, but that's not going to be your best bang for your buck. So what we looked at was using those seller concessions to buy down to a lower interest rate. That's number one. Number two, we use those seller concessions to cover his closing costs to minimize the cash out of pocket for the buyer. And then number three, one of my favorites, rather than paying monthly mortgage insurance, we use those seller concessions to prepay that monthly mortgage insurance. So this is an option that a lot of my clients use, that instead of paying, you know, $150, $180 bucks a month for mortgage insurance, you can pay a flat amount up front, and then you don't pay mortgage insurance on a monthly basis. The way I describe it, Chris, you're familiar. If you pay your car insurance every month, maybe they charge you $100 bucks a month. But if you pay it once a year, maybe the insurance company only charges you $1,100 bucks a year.
Yep.
So you save a little bit, right? Same concept here. If you pay it all up front one time, you're getting a lower cost of mortgage insurance and you don't have to pay it for that remaining 30 years of the loan. So using those seller concessions allowed him to have that minimum cash down payment, roughly $23,152. Now, after the closing, he did put in about $8,000 to repair the property. Roof, electrical work, HVAC, miscellaneous. Now, it's important to realize we asked the seller for $14,500. How much did it actually cost?
It was right around $8,000.
Yeah, and that's just good negotiation, right? We were able to get the seller to pay for it. They got their individual quotes, and then the buyer worked with his individual roofer, electrician, HVAC guys, etc. He was able to get the price down. So that's something that's important is if we're able to negotiate a higher amount from the seller, that doesn't mean that's necessarily how much it's going to cost. That was how much they determined in their quotes, and our buyer was able to get lower quotes for the repairs to the property, which I thought was a great move.
Yeah, and so it worked out really well where the buyer was happy. And what I want to highlight here is this was a $480,000-ish purchase price. Total cash at closing, and this is including the earnest money and everything to buy this property, was $23,000 and change.
Yeah,
that is insane. You're buying an almost $500,000 asset with $23,000 and a few dollars down.
Yeah, that's amazing.
Yeah,
that's amazing. What other, you know, where else are you going to go and get $500,000 asset for $23,000? You can't do that in the stock market.
No.
No matter how good your margin account is. All right. So now let's look at the specifics. Do you want to go through this or you want me to do it?
You got the keyboard. You run with it.
All right. So this is house hack number three for this client. And it's a two unit. Technically, it's a single family home with a mother-in-law suite. So it is a single family residence for financing purposes. But for purposes of analysis, we wanted to list it as a two unit so we can break out the rents. It's his primary residence and it is a 5% down payment. So purchase price is at $485,000. Acquisition costs were things like the prepaid mortgage insurance, property taxes, homeowners insurance, title insurance, appraisal, inspection, all the miscellaneous costs associated with buying the property. Loan costs, these were our flat cost of $1,540 to process and underwrite the loan, plus 1 point since we were able to buy down that rate with those seller concessions. So that total down payment, $24,250. His mortgage balance, $460,750. And then we've broken it out separately here because the spreadsheet doesn't have two lines for seller concessions and initial repairs. The seller concessions were $17,879, plus then those initial repairs of $8,000 for a net concession of $9,897. So his total investment was that down payment of $23,000 plus that $8,000 for initial repairs, $31,152.
And if you guys, I know a lot of you guys can't see this, but these are screenshots of Joe Massey's spreadsheet that we're looking at. So if you actually want to see these screenshots yourself, make sure you click on the link to go to the blog article because these will be in there so you can see them yourself. So all in here is about $31,152 for total investment. Again, I always like to clarify because we include those initial repair costs in the initial investment because, great, you need to do these repairs, even though it happens outside of closing and after closing, you need to do these repairs to get the property at the rent you want and to get rentable more often than not. So, hey, if you have to do these repairs, which doing roof, upgrading electrical, those are repairs that need to be done, you know, much sooner rather than later.
Yeah.
So we include those in our calculations for cap rates and your initial one-year return on investment. So all in, $31,000 and change.
Interest rate, 3.875 on a 30-year term. Now, this is where it gets really fun. So what we put in here is monthly rent per unit after you move out. But we recently spoke with the buyer. These are the rents that he's getting right now while he lives there. All right.
I guess, yeah. And pay attention here. This is going to blow off some socks. This,
I couldn't believe it when he broke these numbers down for us. So downstairs is Section 8 rented, the mother-in-law suite, for $1,941. That's unit number two on our spreadsheet, $1,941. Upstairs, he's got three bedrooms rented out, plus then he's living in the fourth.
Yeah,
right? Total rent, $2,750 for the upstairs, renting three bedrooms. Add those two together, $4,691 that he is renting this property out for, and he lives there. That's pretty darn good.
Oh, that's like really, really, really darn good. So yeah. $4,691 in rent while he's living there. So is he living for free? I would expect so.
Yes, he is. We'll look at the results. But yes, this is a positively cash flowing property. He's getting paid to live there.
Yeah.
Think about that, guys. That is the power of house hacking. He is being paid to have a roof over his head. Pretty amazing stuff. All right, let's look at, oh, we talk about monthly rents. Oh, vacancy factor, 2%. Annual rent increase, 3%. Annual appreciation, 5%. His effective tax rate, 40%.
And I want to talk about the vacancy rate here. Mm-hmm. I mean, 2%, 3% is not going to make a huge difference for the numbers here. But he's renting out the up. So the downstairs already came rented with a tenant in place. Upstairs was completely unoccupied. And so he put out an ad on Facebook Marketplace to go out there and get a few roommates to fill in those spaces up there. And he had no problem filling out those rooms. And that's why he's using a very low vacancy rate, because he was like, hey, after a couple of days, I had to turn off the ads because I was getting overwhelmed with people wanting to rent rooms around $700 a month in Denver. And he had way more demand than he did rooms to offer. So for other house hackers out there who are looking to rent room by room, you can do it. And it definitely is a lot of high demand for renting room by room out there. So
yeah,
that's why we're using a low vacancy rate.
Yep.
Because he also self-manages and he hustles and he gets things filled. He makes things happen.
Yep. So on that, he does not pay for property management. Monthly reserves for maintenance, 4%. Pretty low, but it's a 2001 construction. You've now got new AC, new water heater, new roof, new appliances. Probably going to have pretty minimal reserves, pretty minimal maintenance rather.
And plus, we're doing that because when you, I mean, normally do a percentage, but if you're doing a 8 or 10% of a $4,200 or a $4,600 a month gross rent,
yeah,
that's a lot of money. So yep, part of the reason we lower that is just because he's got a lot of rent coming in.
Yeah. There is an HOA, very cheap, $58 a month to take care of the cul-de-sac. Property taxes every year, $1,598. Insurance every year, $1,500. And then water and sewer, this is actually water, sewer, electric,
trash
and
internet,
right? So he's paying that because he is the owner and the occupant. He's paying roughly $4,200, but then that's baked into the rent from all the roommates and tenants and whatnot. So it's kind of nice because he could say, hey, you know what? Water, sewer, electric, everything's included. So your rent is, you know, X number of dollars per room.
And that's $4,200 for the year.
Right, for the year.
So what's that? I mean, what, 350?
350 a month. Yeah, 350, which is pretty normal, you know, if you add that stuff up. Yeah. All right. So now the results. Drum roll, please. Chris, what do you think the results are? Do you think this is a good deal?
My crystal ball says it's going to be at least cash flow positive.
I think it's cash flow positive.
And a few bucks.
Let's check cash flow. $16,940 positive per year. That's more than $1,000 a month. That's like $1,300 a month that he's making to live in this house. Cash on cash return 54%, cap rate 9.5, 101.3 GRM. This is just a stellar investor, stellar investment. He knows what he's doing. Comfortable living uncomfortably, which allows him to make an incredible living. Look at this, guys. 54% cash flow. Depreciation benefit on his initial investment, 19%. He's paying down debt and getting a 26% return on that. His appreciation of $24,000 a year is a 77% return because he only invested, what, $31,000? This is a 178% first-year return on investment. Look at this, guys. It's insane. He's investing $31,152, return to him $55,000 in the very first year. That's through cash flow, depreciation, your cash now, plus appreciation and debt pay down, your cash later. Fantastic investment. Just a great investment and really speaks to the power of house hacking.
Yeah. And I mean, this is why, just to kind of reiterate some points in the beginning, don't just look at purchase price. Don't just look at cash flow, because when you start factoring in doing a very low down payment financing option and how you can maximize rents, you can get some just amazing returns that are almost unbelievable. But this is reality and this is realistic. And here's a great thing. I mean, this is a great property. He's a great investor who's hustling. But this is not a unicorn. This is not, oh, great, this is a once-in-a-lifetime property. No, there's lots of properties out there like this. And for people that are willing to hustle, as Joe says, live uncomfortably for a bit, they can get some amazing returns. And it's very, very minimal work because, great, we found a house in the MLS that needed, you know, $10,000-ish in repairs. Didn't have to knock on 3,000 doors or do a bunch of, like, crazy financing. Hey, he took a government 30-year financing.
Yeah.
And is getting 100% or 100% plus return his first year.
This was a $500,000 property on the MLS that was at list price, right? Like nothing crazy. There's no fancy trickery here that, oh man, he offered this special contract and got it off 30% off the price and he had this special loan. This is regular, guys. Yeah. Regular deal, regular dude, really savvy, going out there, working hard, understanding the power of living uncomfortably for a short period of time. But you know what? It works for him, works for his lifestyle, and he's not going to be a regular guy for a long period of time. You know, in the future, we're all going to be walking around wanting to be him. And I just cannot say enough positive things about this investor, cannot say enough positive things about the investment. And everyone can do this, right? This is not, we didn't have to invest $200,000. We didn't have to have some sort of crazy, fancy loan. Regular stuff, guys. Great way to make money in the Denver market right now.
All right, guys. So that wraps up this deal analysis. If you guys have questions on this property, reach out to me, reach out to Joe. Again, my specialty is I'm a real estate agent, helps investors buy these types of properties. And one of Joe's specialties is doing the financing side of things. So we are doing this stuff 7 days a week. We have our finger on the pulse of the market. We love talking about it. So definitely reach out with questions. And I always love to hear feedback from our listeners. Let me know what you like, if you like this new format of rather than doing one monthly roundup webinar with the update and then two case studies in there, we are now going to make separate episodes and therefore separate blog posts and separate YouTube videos for the market analysis and then doing one or two separate deals a month as well. I want to get things more laser focused and separated so you could hunt and pick as to what the content that you wanted the most. You go on there and find it. All right, guys, if you need to reach us, go to denverinvestmentrealestate.com. My contact details are on there, or go to loansbyjoemassey.com and his contact details are on there. And we would love to talk with you. We'd love to work with you. Joe, thank you so much, man.
Chris, always appreciate it, man. Love talking about this stuff. Can't wait for the next episode.